Fort McMurray Matters.
Keeping you connected to our community.
Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.
Welcome to another edition of Fort McMurray Matters. Good afternoon. I'm Jaron Vecchio. And joining me over the phone to talk about river breakup, we have the Director of Emergency Management for the RMWB, Scott Davis. And we also have the Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Matt Huff. Scott, Matt, thank you so much for taking a couple of minutes to come on the show.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners, Jaron.
All right. So, river breakup. I feel like, it's a very important topic every year, but probably a little bit more this year, only because of what happened last year. And maybe for those who have just moved to the community and just haven't maybe been keeping up with the news, obviously we had a 1-in-100-year flood. We had around, I think it was around 12 to 13,000 people had to be evacuated from the 6 flood-prone areas. And I know that Wood Buffalo Council has allocated a lot of money into permanent flood mitigation to help, mitigate this risk in the future. However, a lot of this permanent flood mitigation isn't going to be ready for this upcoming river breakup season, so they've allocated a lot of money into temporary measures. I don't know who wants to take it, Scott or Matt, but can you just kind of give us a little bit of a breakdown of just some of the measures that the municipality have taken to make sure we don't see the same kind of event as last year?
I'll lead off if that's okay. Yeah. By saying that what we are doing has likely been noticed by many or most in the community, and what we're doing is focused on the protection of life and property. Following last year's 1-in-100-year ice dam flood, we took it upon ourselves to engage council with numerous options going forward for our flood-prone areas. But before we finalize a lot of the permanent mitigation, we have to ensure that life and property are protected in the meantime. So there are surface mitigation measures that are very obvious. I'm sure that many people have noticed the green and blue triple dams. There is also numerous clay barriers that have been put in place. Yes, we have road closures, but we know that that's an inconvenience for some, but it is, for the safety of our residents and protection of the property. The other thing that people are not necessarily seeing, but an extensive amount of work is going into it, is the management of our underground infrastructure. So we're putting in place about 175 plugs in our pipe infrastructure throughout the downtown area, and that again is to protect against a repeat event that we experienced last year.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong here, Matt, but maybe for those who are just a little bit unaware, a lot of the damage that a lot of properties experienced last year was after the river water got into the sewer system. Is that correct?
That's right. Of course, both our storm and sanitary system is a contiguous system in the downtown area. And unfortunately, quite a number of homes were impacted by both surface floodwaters and waters that made their way through the underground infrastructure. So we've learned a great deal from that, and measures that are being put in place right now are to protect against that happening again.
Mm-hmm. I know that we had a couple of voluntary programs for residents to take part in, the backwater sewer valve, which will help prevent basements from flooding if another incident like last year were to happen, as well as the sandbag program, where residents could go and get materials to create sandbags to protect against any flooding. I don't know if you have any numbers in front of you, Matt, but has there been a good turnout when it comes to residents in the flood-prone areas taking part in these programs?
Both programs are popular. The backflow preventer program provides up to $3,000 towards the installation of a backflow preventer, and we're receiving a lot of inquiries about how to go about doing that and then claiming the money back. That money will be granted in a retroactive fashion, so that if people have already taken it upon themselves to install a backflow preventer, they can still get that money from the RMWB. And the sandbag program is very popular, so much so that we've learned a lot of lessons out of this year's experience that we'll be applying in the future. We have realized that the provision of the basic supplies, the bags and the sand, is making it a chore for residents to put those sandbags in place. So we'll be doing better in the future. In the meantime, that material is still available. Take a look at rmwb.ca/riverbreakup for more information on that.
We're going to take our first break here on Fort McMurray Matters, but don't go anywhere, as coming up after the break, we're going to continue our talk about river breakup.
We'll return in a moment to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7. Today, we're back to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio. And if you're just tuning into the show right now, joining me over the phone is the region's Director of Emergency Management, Scott Davis, as well as the Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Matt Huff. Some of the, the concerns or issues I've been hearing a lot from residents, or I guess I wouldn't call them issues, more just some questions being asked, is about the timing. I know that the measures have been up and running for quite a while, and a lot of people were worried about, well, this seems like you guys are doing it way too early. Maybe this is going to be affecting people's mental health. Also, I've been hearing a lot of people say, well, you're doing all these measures. Do you know that we're going to have a big flood this year? Or, again, this is just precautionary to make sure that if it is happening, we don't have the same event as last year.
Yeah, if I can jump in there, Jaron. We have a close and really great relationship, in my opinion, with Alberta Environment Parks, and what they're telling me is that as every year, there's a potential for ice jam flooding during the breakup of the Athabasca. Mm-hmm. Alberta Environment Parks, they look at several what they call long lead factors that can influence the potential for breakup along the Athabasca. These include snowpack, ice front position, soil moisture, ice thickness, winter temperatures, fall and winter precipitation. So what they're telling me and my staff is that right now they're looking at what they call an average potential. Mm. And we know that depending on that average date of April 19th for breakup, and they haven't given us any indicators of exact dates because we're all watching. We do know that this weekend there was breakup in the Peace River area, and so that's one of the first triggers that we see, and then we watch how that goes, and so far that's going fine. We watch for when the Pembina starts to break up, and that's another trigger. And then what we do is watch for any fluctuations in water levels that can occur because of the ice that's still present, and that makes ice jams unstable and subject to rapid fluctuations. And because we've got two sets of rapids south of us that are in the way, that ice could just carry on down through like a bunch of slush, or it could get jammed up and create a situation similar to last year. So all of the precautions we're taking, I think, are very prudent to ensure that we're protecting life and property. And we continue as the next, I would suggest, 2 weeks come along. We'll be in more contact on a regular basis with Alberta Environment Parks. My staff have already started visual monitoring, and I know Public Works Engineering have taken steps as well. So we add all of these together, along with some of the wise elders out of McMurray Métis that tell me to watch out for bunnies and seagulls, and we're starting to see those. So they go along with all of the electronic measures that we monitor.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you mentioned that you haven't been given, you know, an estimate. There's a lot of factors that go into when river breakup happens every year. The average, I believe you said, was the 19th. Because we are experiencing some warmer weather, it was quite a mild winter compared to years past. Have you guys been given any indication that it might happen sooner rather than later?
No, we haven't. Again, they continue to, they're telling us around that 19th, but the unofficial poll is anywhere from the 12th to the 19th, and if that unofficial poll is indicative, we're thinking a little earlier than normal.
Okay. And again, a point you brought up that I want to mention, and correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, but you had mentioned that the risk of ice jam flooding is at average right now. Just that's coming from Alberta Parks. Last year, before we had our flood, wasn't it also at average? I think it was something that kind of caught everyone off guard. Like I said, I could be wrong here.
No, you're very right. It was average. We thought things were going to go fine, and then there was a hang up in conjunction with the rapids. Eventually, there was a 25 kilometer backlog of ice, so to speak, and behind that ice jam was from memory 4 to 7 meter or 12 to 21 feet of water. So as that came through, my understanding is once it hit the islands that are just north of the Highway 63 bridge, mm-hmm. That's where things kind of backed up. And then what the water will look for that path of least resistance, which was up the clear water. And that's how we ended up having more water than normal in that area.
I think that brings up a good point, though, that, you know, even though the risk, they say, is average, you still have to make sure you know you're prepared, because look what happened last year. You're average, and I'm not saying the municipality was lackadaisical last year. I know just from seeing all the measures you were taking were, you know, preparing for it, and unfortunately we still had a major flood.
Yeah, I would suggest that the Athabasca and Mother Nature does have its way of changing any plans that we have. So we take our best efforts to protect life and property. And this year we've made some changes in emergency management. We identified some lessons out of the evacuations. We safely evacuated 13,800 with no spike in COVID. So we did some things right. We are smoothing out the way to register evacuees this year. We've gone to an electronic method, so it's a lot faster than the paper method. We're working very collaboratively with the local hotels and camps for accommodations. So cognizant of COVID, I don't want to put people in the mass gatherings such as an arena, so we're taking those precautions. We had an exercise, I want to say about 4 weeks ago, where we had 150 different representatives from provincial agencies, emergency management professionals, and industry and utility, and we went through 2 full days of exercising, looking at clarifying roles, processes, strengthening our preparation. So even though we had an exercise in 2020, here we are 2021, we took some of those lessons, identified them, and applied them to the exercise this year. And I'm really proud to say we've procured and implemented the Alertable app. One of the things last year I was concerned about was getting notification out to people quick, and there were some delays, and through the process of engaging with the province to get those alerts out. And I had made some promises a couple of years ago when I first got here, listening to residents that were concerned about 2016 wildfire and the delays in notifying. So this Alertable app allows us to send out critical information very quickly, giving people instructions on what to do, where the event is, regardless of whether it's a flood or a hazardous chemical or some other threat that might hit the RM. We're able to give the urban area as well as any of the communities within the RMWB or as the RMWB as a whole those up-to-date information so that they can protect themselves.
We're going to take our last break here on Fort McMurray Matters, but don't go anywhere, as coming up after the break, we're going to finish our talk about river breakup.
We'll return in a moment to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7. We're back to Fort McMurray Matters. Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.
Welcome back to Fort McMurray Matters. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio. And if you're just tuning into the show right now, joining me over the phone is the region's Director of Emergency Management, Scott Davis, as well as the Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Matt Huff. And we're talking about river breakup. Well, we're running out of time, and there's still a few more questions I wanted to ask about. And Matt, I like to think that you are now an expert when it comes to explosives and drills, specifically when it comes to ice jam, because I feel like you've been getting this question 100 times since you've taken over as Deputy Chief Administrative Officer. And we keep hearing from residents about, if there is another ice jam, why don't we use explosives? Why don't we use a drill machine that we've been seeing some other communities try before? I know that you guys have looked into it, but it's just not feasible. Can you maybe explain a little bit more why the municipality, if there is another ice jam, isn't going towards these options?
Thanks for the opportunity to address this. The key takeaway is that bombing loosens jams, but doesn't break them up. In fact, explosives of any kind would melt ice in the immediate vicinity of a blast, but it then repacks and freezes even hotter. So we have asked this question of numerous people, including a former general of the Canadian military, and there just is no evidence in support of that type of action. What we've also done, following a mandate of our council to look into, was research other options, such as ice breaking, active mitigation measures that would see heavy equipment on the Athabasca during the winter. We are at this stage doubtful whether that would work or be safe enough to even attempt. However, it is leading us to research another type of active mitigation, that being dredging. So you actually try and deepen the river at the points where jams are most likely to occur. But that's something we have to work on with the government of Alberta, Alberta Environment in particular, before we would even be permitted to run a pilot program in that regard. So we're still going to continue to look into those active mitigation measures, but at this point we are focused on the permanent mitigation, which is of course the construction of berms.
All right. And probably the last question we're going to have here, but I feel like it's a very important one and something that we've been getting a lot of comments about in our river breakup stories. the water treatment plant. We know that some of the river water got back into their water treatment plant, and it forced Fort McMurray and some of the surrounding areas to go into a boil water advisory for several weeks. Can you kind of talk about some of the measures that have been taken to make sure that, you know, a repeat offense doesn't happen?
The impact on the water treatment plant was perhaps aside from the main evacuation and the damage caused by the flood itself, the impact on the water treatment plant was perhaps the biggest surprise for the RMWB and all residents in our community. We have undertaken now, I think it's six. Studies on the various components of the plant itself. We've upgraded valves. We have changed the way outlets work. What happened was that river water actually entered an outlet pipe into our treated water storage. That can no longer happen because we have changed the physical infrastructure itself. On top of that, there have been numerous improvements on the control systems themselves to ensure that all of the necessary alarms in the event of a flood are working as they should and recognized immediately, and the response is immediate. There was another exercise. This was separate to the one that Scott talked about at the water treatment plant, simulating an event like the flood last year. That simulation went extremely well. So we're very confident that we have done what is necessary to avoid the type of boil water advisory situation we were in last year.
Mm-hmm. So, obviously, we can't say for sure that a boil water advisory, you know, won't happen. But it sounds like from what you were saying that the same exact situation that happened last year, that's not going to happen. Or are you confident saying that?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Look, I would be, too confident to say that a boil water advisory would never happen. However, the mechanism that caused it last year during the flood is just simply not possible at this time.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. But Matt and Scott wanted me to make sure I mention that those who are struggling mentally when thinking about last year's flood and potentially whatever happens this year, there are supports or direct links to supports through the RMWB's website. And also, if we do have another event and volunteers are needed, we need to make sure that all COVID-19 measures are followed, as well as we are dealing with what looks like a third wave of the virus. Now that's all the time we have for today on Fort McMurray Matters, but make sure to tune into Mix 103.7 every weekday at noon to hear the interviews that matter to you and your community. Once again, I'm Jaron Vecchio, and this has been Fort McMurray Matters.
That's the end of another edition of Fort McMurray Matters.
Want a copy of this episode or any past episode? Download the podcast at mix1037fm.com.
Brought to you by Colin Hartigan of Coldwell Banker Fort McMurray, Cooper & Company Law Firm, and Fort McMurray Orthodontics on Mix 103.7.